Welcome to Work From Your Happy Place, the podcast that equips you with the tools, know-how, and motivation to live your dreams and find your happy place. Be sure to sign up for our free weekly newsletter for a recap of the week's guests and a preview of what's in store. To sign up, simply text the word happy place with no space to 33444. Now, it's my pleasure to introduce the host of Work From Your Happy Place, Belinda Ellsworth.
It's Belinda Ellsworth, and welcome to Work From Your Happy Place. I'm really excited about today's guest. I have Jim Klopman with me. Jim is a lifelong innovator who has always been one of those people who thinks differently. He believes balance training has sharpened his ability to make new neural connections and see the possibilities and pathways that others miss. Originally, Jim was looking for a way to maintain his own athletic performance well into his 90s. But the slack bow balance training system he developed turned out to be a key to whole body and mind fitness that was even more revolutionary than he could have imagined. He is eager to spread his knowledge, techniques, and tools far and wide to help seekers like him tune their brains to perform better in work and sports, sleep better, look younger, and live longer, which I think all of us would be interested in having that ability. So please help me welcome Jim Klopman.
Thanks. I really appreciate being here. I'm thrilled about it. Thank you.
Awesome. Well, Jim, why don't you just take a few minutes so our listeners can get to know you a little bit better and just sort of fill us in on this journey of how you got where you are and then a little bit more about what you're doing today.
Well, the journey, you know, all journeys, I guess, started somewhere in second grade when my parents thought maybe I was, I don't know if it's the right term to use, but mentally not all there. And they sent me off for a week to New York University to have all sorts of tests done 3 hours a day for 5 days, and came back that I was above average intelligence and I needed to work harder. Of course, this was the 1950s, but, you know, I had an academic career of flunking eighth grade 2 years in a row. It took me summer school to get out of eighth grade after flunking it for 2 years, and then flunking ninth grade, going to, I don't know, six different colleges. It took me 10 years to get out of college. I'd flunk out, go work, flunk out, go work. And then years and years later, I guess I was in my late 40s, I discovered that I had pretty severe case of ADD and dyslexia. And from there, but, you know, all during this time, I was successful in business, but I was only successful in certain places, such as managing and influencing people. But if you gave me a budget to set or work with a bunch of numbers that I had to line up, it was very tough to do without a lot of help. Turns out, after the diagnosis of ADD in my 40s, I started this business called Slack Bow Balance Training in my mid-50s, and I really felt like things started to change and shift in my thinking and the way I looked at the world. And for the heck of it, I went and had a brain scan done by the well-known Dr. Daniel Amen, who's written all the books on the brain. And they came back and said, you know, you have a lot of brain damage. And I think that was the cause of a lot of problems I had through the years. So it turns out that, you know, I went into this business of balance training where I teach athletes and people, not physical therapy type of balance training. I'm talking about people who just can operate normally every day. And we improve their balance, and by improving their balance, they get better at their sport. They move better through the day. They're less likely to get hurt from falls. There's all sorts of good benefits that come from it, but one of the hidden benefits that I found out was it really improves the output and performance of your brain and how you function day to day. And I just think it's one of the most important things that humans do that we kind of don't do anymore because we live in this modern world.
Well, that's really interesting. And don't I hear and talk to people all the time, and I think people struggle with this or just thinking that they don't get certain things or they could never do this because, and especially kids. I think kids get frustrated at, you know, not completing the eighth grade, flunking out of ninth grade, and just learning then how to move ahead. And so I think that this is actually a problem that just really is not talked about. Would you not agree with that?
No, I agree completely. And I think Malcolm Gladwell or somebody did a podcast about these people. And when you're like me, failure doesn't bother me. I failed so many times, it's not really a problem. Where those who kind of glide through life and are very successful in school and they come out and hit the realities of the world and they fail, it's just a shock to them. for people like me, it's just a, well, that was today, I got tomorrow, and I'm going to pick myself up and do it again, do it differently. The other part of it is that I think that you just picked up on is that people like us, we see the world differently. We're kind of the ones that pick up on things that maybe other people don't pick up because our brains just operate differently. We don't have maybe all the correct connections, and we have jumps from one connection to the other, and this causes us to pull in information from 100 different areas to make a story that's, you know, understandable, cogent, and effective.
Great. Can you think of an example right off the top of your head? I know I'm putting you on the spot, but I'd love just a couple of examples of that so that people listening can say that that's me, or yeah, I totally get that.
Well, I mean, you know, for me, it was, again, you know, how do you get through college? And it came down to, one, I needed to stop worrying about it. Two, I can't tell you how many times I would take a test and I'd go, I know this stuff and I only got a C. Well, then I started grading myself like based on knowledge, not by my grade. So the test would come back, I'd get a C, where I should have gotten an A because I mismarked something or I didn't, you know, put a dot in the right place, but I knew the knowledge. So I'd go through the test again and go, well, I knew the answer to that. I knew the answer to that. I knew the answer to that. So my C would turn into a B plus or an A. And so I'd be perfectly okay with the fact that I got the knowledge. Sorry, I didn't score well, but I got the knowledge. So it's a way of judging yourself and what you do, I think, is a big part of it. In terms of pulling in, you know, information from all sorts of different places, we've done it in this balance business. And I don't know, it was just by luck, but I knew it was helping my brain. And I had a friend who was a physical therapist, had a son who had had 3 major concussions, and he wasn't recovering from his previous concussion. And I thought, well, you know, one of the tests for a concussion is their balance. If they lose balance skills, that means they most likely have a concussion. What if we just reverse engineer that and start training his balance? Would that help them recover? Well, we've had incredible results with people who have had concussions. They're not recovering with the symptoms from concussions. We balance train them. Suddenly the system, you know, reengages, gets itself upright, so to speak, starts working again, and those symptoms disappear. So it's just looking at things kind of from the back door, coming in from the side, and just not approaching everything from the front.
Great. So can you explain just a little bit more about the balance training and what that entails?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, for your audience, which, I mean, working from a happy place, and one of the things that we find is that one of the things that we do different about balance, or look at balance training different about, is that what makes us human is the fact that we stand on 2 feet. What makes us even more human is we spend most of our life on 1 foot or the other. When we're walking, we're on 1 foot or the other. And it's a remarkable thing that we're able to do this. You know, the example I use is if you take your Ken or your Barbie doll and you try to stand it up on 1 foot, it's impossible. And so it's remarkable that humans do this, and no other mammal really does this. But we do all our training on 1 foot. But the second thing we've discovered is it's a hidden loss. You don't know how bad your balance is. So you walk around day to day on a flat, perfectly flat floors, perfect steps, perfect sidewalks. So you have no idea that your balance is getting degraded because you're not challenging it. So we go in and we put people through balance challenges, but we start them at a low level and we progress them slowly. All of our balance challenges are on 1 foot. We really make people engage their peripheral vision. We have them take off their glasses. We teach them how to hold their head up. We teach them how to walk, get away from striking on your heels, landing on your forefoot. So it's all progression, and people are just blown away when I show them, well, by the end of this session, you're going to be doing this, and they just can't believe that they would be. But because we take them through a little tiny bit of little steps of safe progressions, their balance gets better and better. And it's not a skill. It's not a set of muscles. It's a software system. And all we're doing is turning on a software system that you have shut off. You know, nobody ever says, hey, I need to spend more time in the office, right?
Right.
They're basically saying, I got to get out. I got to go do something. Well, every time you get out of the office to sort of re-energize, to get those batteries in your body working again, you go do a balance challenge. You walk in nature on an uneven trail. You ride a motorcycle. You ride a bike. You play golf. You play tennis. All these things are balance challenges. And then when you come back to the office, you feel better. So it's a great way to sort of re-energize your body. And I think you can even do it, you know, in the middle of the day, stand at your desk on one foot with the other foot kicked back a little bit and just stand there for 20, 30 seconds. And you'd be surprised how your brain, and there's research that shows us that your subconscious mind lights back up and that overactive, chatty conscious mind shuts down. So it's just a, it's great for everything you do in life is to just challenge your balance whenever you can.
Wow, that's interesting. Really interesting. So then tell us a little bit then how this business has shaped your lifestyle.
Well, in terms of, you know, it's interesting, you know, entrepreneurs kind of go through phases, but, you know, I've been going through the struggle phase lately and just coming out of that, in that this is so new and different. Nobody would ever believe that if I told you with 3 hours of training, we can improve your golf, you know, reduce your golf handicap by probably 40-50%. And they just can't believe that. Don't I have to spend hundreds of hours on the practice tee to learn how to hit the ball better? No, that's not the case. If you improve your balance, you get better. Every skier we've touched gets better within a couple of hours. So it's just so, people don't believe it. So people look at you like you're crazy, and then you demonstrate and they learn it. And so we're kind of coming out of that phase of your madmen. I guess my grandfather invented part of the telephone with Alexander Graham Bell. You know, they went through that cycle. It was like, who wants to talk to anybody over phone? We've got telegraph. So we're kind of coming out of that now. And I think when I talk about it shaping my lifestyle, it's just part of what I know of who I am, that if I'm going to bring something new and different to the world, you have to sort of suffer the slings and arrows of these others who doubt you. And then, of course, all that switches at one point in time, and everybody comes around and goes, oh, of course that's true. You know, we figured that would be true, but they weren't there a year or two before. So to me, what I love about it is bringing something new and different to the world. And in terms of shaping my lifestyle, it keeps your brain active. You know, I'd have never want to retire. I just can't imagine sitting there and watching The Voice, you know, two nights a week, and sort of disengaging my body and my brain. This stuff builds new neural networks. The more challenges you have when you bring something new to the world like this.
Well, that's awesome. So then one of the things that I think is, I love this piece of this, is what are some of your two greatest skill sets then that you think have helped you succeed in owning your own business and being successful with it?
Well, you know, if you know, they did a research study recently, said, what do parents do to develop entrepreneurs? And they looked at the parents of all these successful entrepreneurs, and they found no common ground at all. It was like, where does it come from? I don't know. And I think the same thing's true. You know, everybody's on the internet today saying, oh, if you do what I do, you're going to make $1 million. If you do what I did, you're going to make $1 million. And they're all different. So I'm never sure what the path is and where an entrepreneur is. What I do think an entrepreneur has, one characteristic, is that there's a little bit of crazy in them. They have an idea that they think will work. And oftentimes that idea is one that other people go, well, why would you leave a good job to go do that? Or, you know, what makes you think you have the ability to do that? And so you kind of have the world against you. So, I mean, one of the most important things, I think the two most important things are, is one, they have a very powerful belief in themselves and what they're doing. And because, you know, you're an entrepreneur yourself, it's loaded with failure. I mean, very seldom do you start an entrepreneurial venture and just glide right through. It takes effort, and you're going to fail, and you do it again, and fail, do it again, then you hit a success, and you fail, do it again. So the second characteristic, and this is one reason why I've hung in so long with this, because I want to pass this on to my children, is entrepreneurs persevere. They don't give up. They just keep going at it. And how many stories, even Elon Musk, after he made billions of dollars at PayPal, starts, you know, his car company, and he runs out of money, he sells his house after being worth, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars. He works it down to nothing, has to sell his house and rent a house to raise money so he can get the car company going. So to me, that's what it's about. It's that level of perseverance. And you read about entrepreneurs all the time who I don't know, end up being on welfare, and it's like that's what happens just before the whole thing breaks open for him. So it's just, you just got to hang in there. That's the most important thing to me.
I think you also stated here in the notes that we took ahead of time is having vision and you're a good coach. And I think that those are two huge things, and I think they're hard for people to grasp. I talk about having vision all the time, but I know it's a difficult thing to articulate what that means, really, as well as there's not a tremendous amount of books on it. Like, I'm always teaching people, you need to read about it. And so I'm constantly looking for awesome books on visionaries and having vision and how to keep the vision. And so if you want to just, I love that you put that here. So if you'd like to just share a little bit about.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. And I jumped around on your question. You know, with vision, I think that the thing that people really lack in terms of vision is a belief. We all sit around and go, gee, wouldn't it be wonderful if they had a plastic bag that we could just seal with our fingers? No. I mean, somebody said that one day somewhere, yet nobody really acted on it. So I think a lot of people have vision. They just don't know or have confidence to act on it. And there's I do a lot of study on inventions and serendipitous inventions where things are invented at the same time happen all the time. But the ones who succeed are the ones who act. So you can have the vision, and I think vision is not as difficult as people think. I think vision is you have a vision, you act on it. So, you know, you have your great business where you're a public speaker and you help people sell and do all that. Now you have this vision of saying, well, I'm going to do a podcast. You didn't go, well, I don't know if I could do a podcast and I don't know anything about it. And, you know, I don't know if it'd be a good idea and someone else is going to get ahead of me and blah, blah, blah. No, you had a vision, you went forward and you made it successful. So I think the big part of it is acting on it. You know, the example I used before about the telephone, my grandfather and Alexander Graham, he helped Alexander Graham Bell invent part of the telephone. Well, this is part of the patent office history. There was an academic in the United States that had a working telephone a year before Alexander Graham Bell did. And he thought, why would, you know, it's just an academic exercise for him, but why would anybody ever want to talk over the phone? So he thought after a year, you know, I'm just going to file a patent on it. And in those days, you walk the patent into the patent office. He walked his patent into the patent office 6 hours after Alexander Graham Bell did. So, yeah, they both had vision, but who acted on it? Who didn't act on it? And that's a big part of it. You have a vision, trust the fact the world needs what you think it needs. You know, if it's a different type of sponge at the sink when you wash the dishes, just go, man, I wish I had a sponge that would do this. Act on it. That's all. I mean, to me, and maybe because it's easy for me to have vision, but I think it is easy, and I think everybody else has it. They just got to learn to act on it.
That's awesome, and that's really, really great advice. So what is one of your most outstanding accomplishments or something that's you've achieved that's meaningful for you?
Well, you know, I mean, we all say it, but, you know, the reason we're here is that I think to a certain extent is to keep the species alive. So you have to have kids that, that you want to do well. And I mean, I'm proud of all my children. So that's, you know, one thing that is probably my biggest success. And I don't think it's necessary because all the things I did, you know, I had good partners in raising them too. But I think the other is, you know, the biggest accomplishment for me is where I am. I mean, it's, you know, every day is for everybody to a certain extent is a struggle to get to that next step, to get to that next step. So to me, to accomplish the fact that we've, you know, written a book, created products, patented products, pulled all this package together is a big accomplishment in terms of, again, we've talked some about that entrepreneurial stuff before, is that, you know, pulling all those little pieces together as an entrepreneur. I've been a manager in big corporations. It's nice having a staff of, you know, 30 people working for you, and you just kind of had an idea and throw it out there and it gets done. But when you're sitting here grinding it out yourself as an entrepreneur, it's a different thing altogether. You're doing everything from, you know, actually building boards to filing patents to just everything. You know this yourself being an entrepreneur as well. You do everything, and that's a great accomplishment. And so I think if you're an entrepreneur and you achieve success, you look back on that phase and you go, well, that was amazing. I was able to pull all that together.
That's absolutely true. And I think that I love that you said it's where you've gotten this far, because sometimes I think people get hung up. I hear it all the time. I wish, it was still like this. I wish it would go back to that. Remember when we did that? That was amazing. And they kind of stay living in that space because it seemed pretty amazing. And yet, if you take that knowledge and move forward, the next success, if you will, might not be as amazing as that one, but it's still another level of success and you continue to go. I always tell people when you reach that goal, it's like celebrate it, but it's like, okay, you know, what's next or what's our next steps and where would I like the journey to take me now? And I think it's living in that journey is really at the end of the day, the success or the accomplishment. And I think a lot of people get stuck in reliving what they wish they could do again.
Right. And I think we get stuck because we're all sort of, you know, this whole visualize your goals, your vision board, you know, your objectives, all that stuff. Well, that just isn't so great when you reach those objectives. It's really, you want to build a journey. What's my journey? I want to learn as much as I can and deliver as much as I can to the human race to make it a better place. If you don't, then really, what's the purpose of being here?
Great. So now, polar opposite of that, share one of your challenges or things, something that you faced and then how you worked through that.
Well, you know, the big challenge for me is going back to, you know, finding out that I had, when I went and had my brain scan done, they came back, said, you have the brain of an NFL football player. You're on your way to getting, you know, early Alzheimer's or dementia or, you know, even this chronic traumatic encephalopathy that football players get. And so you look at your brain and you see these holes where it's not functioning. So the challenge to me was, okay, now I know I have this. What do I do to overcome it? I knew I was building sort of new operating systems by doing the balance work, and that really helped a lot. But, you know, it's interesting to find out after all these years that you have post-traumatic stress, and now, you know, when I have periods of super high anxiety or I wake up in the middle of the night and just, you know, all charged up, now it's like, no big deal. It's just a wiring problem, and I'm going to rewire it. And things start to rewire, and I'm functioning better in the world today than I have in the last 60 years. So I feel good about the fact that I'm getting better in all aspects of my life. Emotionally, physically, my mental performance is better than it ever has been before. So it's just, I think the objective that we're supposed to be doing in this world is to get better at everything every day. And if you're not doing that, I don't think you're doing yourself, I think you're doing yourself a disservice if you're not doing that. So reading a lot, learning a lot. My breadth of knowledge is extremely broad. I have people who say, well, you need to do, you know, videos and talk about all the other things, you know, and I just feel like you can get too broad in terms of how you market things. So I focus on what I'm doing now. But I think the thing to accomplish every day, if you're anybody, entrepreneur or otherwise, is what did I learn? What did I do better? And how can I do all that just, you know, better again tomorrow?
That's great advice for sure. So this is one of the sort of signature questions of the show. And what does working from your happy place mean to you?
Well, it's, you know, working from my happy place is it, what am I doing to help people? And, you know, the idea is not how much money you make, but how much service you can provide. And I think the money becomes something that's a byproduct to that. So how can I help people? And I think every time I succeed and I get somebody to come back and say, hey, you wouldn't believe what happened. Boom, this happened. I'm like, well, I know I knew it was going to happen, but it's really great to hear back from you that it has happened. And I find that that's a, you know, an incredibly important thing in terms of what makes me happy at work. The other thing that's making me happy at work now, and I mentioned it before, probably spending too much time talking about it, but I know things that I can do now at work to sort of make the day go better. And I know I feel like I'm selling what I do, but, you know, it's balance. Do a little bit of balance 2 or 3 times a day. I stand up at a stand-up desk all day long, but as soon as you lean on a stand-up desk, you've lost your sense of balance. So, you know, I let go of the desk and I stand on 1 foot. I'm doing it now. And it helps clear the brain and make the brain operate. So I always feel like I can go to a sort of centered, happy place during the day just by doing a little bit of balance challenge 3 or 4 times a day.
That's awesome. So there's one other thing I want to ask you about. And but you also said getting, I love this that you wrote this, but getting enough rest, getting enough love, and having good food. You know what? Those are important things that I think people just want to ignore. And yet I know I've been on a health journey this last year myself, and I can't, it's hard to impress upon people. They're looking for a magic pill, and it's like, no, I'm just eating healthier. I make sure I get some exercise. I'm walking. I'm not like killing myself. I'm just walking. You know, I walk about 6 to 8 miles a day, several times a week.
That's great.
And that's new for me because I was always too busy, too much work to do. But now I have figured, I mean, I did my walk yesterday and I got in 3-4 phone calls while I was doing it. So it's a matter of choice. But I think that people don't get enough rest and they say, oh, I don't have time. Or they don't get good food and they say they can't figure it out or it doesn't really matter. And I think it does matter. And so I'd love for you to just expand on that just a little bit.
Well, I mean, I you know, it is a... I mean, good food to me is, and I, people look at me, you know, all the time people look at me and go, what do you do to work out? And frankly, all I do is balance train. I look very, very fit for somebody my age. I don't have much body fat and I, you know, have defined muscles, but it's not like I spend a lot of time in the gym. I think that, you know, eating is something that you got to pay attention to. And it's, The information is coming out now. I mean, I've been on this diet for, you know, I guess 25 years, but it's a world of not low fat. It's crazy, but it's high fat and it's saturated fat. And it's, you know, very low sugar, very low carbohydrates. And I don't know, it's just, you just have to pay attention to those things and do it in such a way that you're eating. If you start thinking about food more like medicine than you do some sort of, you know, great experience, that's a better way to look at food. I think you should have great food experiences and go to great restaurants and have great culinary treats. But most of the time, it really is just medicine. And then in terms of sleep, it's just, you can't overcome the fact that you have to have that sleep. And if you think about, I think entrepreneurs would go, oh, I don't have time to sleep. But if they thought about sleep as work, which it is, I go to bed and I got a problem to work on while I'm sleeping, that's happening. So I'm working on all my problems when I'm asleep, particularly if you give yourself a little message before you go to bed. Hey, I got this problem. I want an answer on this. Go to sleep. And you're working on it subconsciously. So in effect, good sleep for an entrepreneur is working time. It's better working time. You're working with your subconscious mind. If you want to get spooky thoughts in terms of you travel outside of yourself to get answers, you do that as well. So, I mean, I think it's a very important thing and it is good work. And in terms of relationships, I mean, you know, you manage people, just who you have around you makes a biggest difference. If there are people that you connect with, and I believe, again, there's some sort of spooky connections that we have with some people, it kind of sets yourself up organically to be into a sort of a better circle of the world, so to speak, and you attract more of those people that you feel comfortable around, that give you good energy, you give them good energy, and it just makes everything about you work that much better. I always look at teams. You see teams of superstars, they don't play as well. Then you see a team of, you know, so-so players, if it's basketball, football, whatever, and they perform exceedingly well. It's because of that person-to-person connection that team has that makes them so successful.
That's interesting. We were just talking about this, our team, before we got on this podcast. And it's that difference between self-esteem and self-confidence, which so many people sort of combined. But, you know, self-confidence comes from knowledge, which you've already talked about, learning, being a good student, and honing your skills and getting better to those and continue to be, you know, a student or learning. But that self-esteem comes with the people that you surround yourself with. And so if you really want to gain in that particular area, you can't continue to go back to the people every day that are doing nothing, naysayers, doubters, telling you, why are you doing this? Why are you wasting your time with this? And yet people keep going back to those people, hoping they're going to get a different response.
Right. Exactly. I mean, and you see that, and you see people who, I mean, you know that too. I mean, I've, you see people get into a group and they operate from an ego space. And you just know that they're not part of the team. I mean, I really don't care what, when you tell me I've done this, I've done that. You know, I like to hear people say, we've done this, we've done that. And I get so stuck in that we thing. God, when I write in the book, the editors would come back and they go, who's we? And I'm like, it's me. I don't know. I just use we all the time because I feel like there's been 100 people involved in getting me where I am. So it's not, you know, I may be writing it and I may be the one developing it, but it wasn't just me. It was, you know, I got data and information from thousands and thousands of places. So it's a we, but it's a huge we. It's not like the three of us or something like that.
That's so funny because when I'm talking to people about when I come in and speak at their event, what I'm going to do, I say, well, we do this, we do that. And they go, I'm sorry, who's we? And I get the same thing all of the time. And I'm like, well, my team, but, you know, it's we collectively. Like, I don't come to this with just this knowledge. I've gathered this knowledge from, you know, we do surveys with 10,000 people, sometimes 80,000 people. And it's like, so the knowledge I bring to you is coming from a we. And now I do have a team that helps train. But for years I said we, and I had nobody helping me train. It just,
I know.
It was, I know. Come from that exact same space. That's so funny.
I'm still uncomfortable saying I. And so, because it is a we. I don't care. It is a we. And if you're like you are, you have the right energy. The we is there because you're attracting that knowledge and information from people almost on some kind of magical level. And when you do it right, you know, people show up on your doorstep and you're like, well, how did this right person show up at the right time? And I think because you link into the correct we, so to speak.
That's right. So one of the things I wanted to ask you about, because I've been on the cusp of doing it and I just haven't pulled the trigger and done it. And I was like, well, I'll get your thoughts on this because you said the stand-up desk. But I've really been leaning toward getting one of the walking desks in my office and changing that out. And what's your feelings on that? Or do you have any? Do you know what I'm talking about?
I have lots of feelings on that. And I'll send you one of my little under the desk balance training things. But a couple of things. And God, if somebody's on here who has one of these walking desks and you've got different data, you know, contact Belinda and tell her. But two things is when we train people how to walk and move and even balance, we have them really engage their eyes in a broad peripheral vision, engaging sort of the whole landscape. And they end up moving better and balancing better. There's balance training equipment out there now where they have you look at little screens, and we know that it negatively affects your balance. Looking at really little rectilinear screens all the time, in fact, will negatively affect your balance. You need to engage the peripheral vision. What people don't know is 90% of the information you get in your visual system comes through the peripheral vision, and it's a subconscious knowledge. It comes direct into your subconscious mind. It's not something you pick up consciously. So when you're walking on a treadmill and you're looking at a screen and you're trying to do work, you're doing a disservice to yourself in terms of the walking because you're not walking properly. You're looking at something close to you. It's a short visual field, and it's also a narrow visual field. So I think that's not good for walking. And it turns out, and there was an article, I think, in the New York Times or Wall Street Journal last year or the year before that talked about, you know, all these high-powered execs in New York who got on their walking desk. Well, they were coming back saying they're having more errors in the, you know, emails that they're writing. They're having more errors in the numbers they're working with. So there was an error rate that was starting to occur because people were doing the walking and trying to do the screen work and the keyboard work at the same time. So, I mean, I've always been against the walking desk. And again, I may get crucified by the walking desk crowd, but, you know, it's like if you're going to, you go out and you take your walk in nature, and mm-hmm. this is what they've shown, is a walk in nature has the effect of almost like an antidepressant. If you take a walk, like on a treadmill, or you take a walk in a cityscape and there's stuff, nothing but these flat rectilinear surfaces around you, it doesn't do nearly as much good for you as it does when you go out, you have a nice broad vision, you see things like trees and bushes that have no perfectly vertical and horizontal lines to them, like a floor and a wall, is much better for you emotionally and actually opens your brain to better thoughts. So I don't know.
I love I'm this. Against, you know what? That's why I've hesitated. And I, so people are always saying, why don't you walk here? Why don't you walk here? So I walk on this trail, and it's a bike trail or a, you know, walking trail that they, it's an old railroad trail right. that they've turned into, you know, bike slash walking right. slash there's horses out there sometimes. Right. And so I get on that trail. I got to get on my trail, and I get on it, and I've walked different sections of it. And I know based on right. the time I have, which where I'm getting to, and it has helped me physically, but it rejuvenates me so much that it's hard for me to even articulate. And so I just say, right. I don't want to walk in the city. I don't want to walk in this neighborhood. Right. I don't want to walk. I want to get on my trail. I just like, right. And so I've hesitated in getting the walking desk, even though I thought this is probably a good idea, but there was always this hesitation in me thinking, is this really a good idea? And so I love your feedback because it's good for me to get out of the office and then just do my walking because I do start to brainstorm and have ideas and I get super excited out there and I'll record them like, oh my gosh, here's an idea I'm having. So that's great feedback. So why don't you, in closing, just share with some of our guests what things that is new and exciting that you're working on and how can people find you?
Well, they can find anything Slackbow, SlackBow online is us. We're at slackbow.com. My phone number's in there. My email's in there. There's information about the book and our products. And I think, you know, one of the problems we've had is our marketplace is anybody from age 12 to age 80 who's mobile, who plays a sport, who wants to improve their brain function, wants to, you know, I didn't tell you live longer. I mean, we didn't even talk about that, but you know, the amount of people who are dying from falls every year has doubled over the last 10 years. And that's just ridiculous. It should be decreasing, but it's going up. So it's become a real medical problem for people they need to improve their balance. But we're kind of, I think, pivoting a little bit, and we're going back to focusing on just golf at this point in time. Every time we touch a golfer, they just play much better. I mean, we've had several golfers shoot the best scores of their life, or lifelong golfers age 60 end up with the lowest handicaps they've ever had just by improving their balance and their balance and their strokes. So we're thinking of sort of re-engaging in that world. But, you know, I can't get away from selling the book. I mean, the book is everybody reads the book, comes back with, you know, I think we've had one bad review, and I don't think the guy read the book, to be honest with you, from his comments. But it makes a remarkable change in people's lives. Once you focus on balance, you don't get away from it. When you're walking on that trail, whether you like it or not, you're in a world that does not have a perfectly flat surface. All the trees are irregular. You're causing your balance system to be engaged. And once you do that, and there's great research on this, you're engaging your subconscious mind. And that's why you're walking along, not thinking of anything. And then you're like, oh, crap, there's the answer to that question. And, you know, you lock it away or you record it, whatever you're doing to, you know, keep that information on that walk. And it's something that wouldn't have come up while you're just sitting around your office. So,
what's the name of the book again? What's the name of the book?
The name of the book is Balance is Power.
Okay, Balance is Power. That's awesome. All right. Well, Jim, this has absolutely been delightful. I know I've learned a lot in this session. I've thoroughly enjoyed chatting with you. And I think that's a book that everybody probably should get just to even have that little bit of knowledge, anything that they can do on a daily basis to help themselves. And like you said, live longer. And I can believe your statistics on more injuries, and I don't know if it's the age bracket that I'm getting into, but every single time I turn around, I'm hearing about people falling and having to get hip replacement getting, you know, hip surgery because they've broken their hip. And this seems to be increasing at a pretty large number. And and when people get a lot older, that becomes difficult with them. And I can't tell you the number of friends I've had that they're you know, elderly parents end up, they're perfectly healthy and then they fall and then they break their hip and they end up dying because of complications from the surgery and everything else versus they were perfectly healthy before they fell and had this hip problem. So,
Yeah, and that's that hidden, you don't know, you know, I've created this thing called the Klotman Balance Index, of 0 to 100, 50 being the average, 20 meaning you need a cane or a walker. Well, the world is built for canes or walkers, and you don't realize you've lost your balance. And then you have a slight little balance challenge, and you don't have the skills to recover from it, or we have found that with good balance, you learn how to fall better. And it's the number one cause of accidental death and injury for people over the age of 65 or falls. And if you're over the age of 45 and you go to the emergency room, there's a 50% chance you're there for a fall. And it's just crazy how much it happens. And here's one more crazy statistic, and I know I'm supposed to tell story and not numbers, but the number one cause of falls for people over the age of 65 are curbs. We see curbs all the time, but curbs trip up people over the age of 65. That's nuts. We have to teach these people to work on their balance in their 40s and 50s so that when they hit their 60s, 70s, 80s, that they have this good balance and this number turns around. It shouldn't be doubling out over 10 years. It should be, you know,
decreasing
by half, right?
That's awesome information. I'm a stats girl, so I don't mind it all day long. I know people love stories too, but I'm a numbers girl and I love statistics. So I love you sharing that. That's no problem at all. Well, again, this has been delightful and thank you so much for your time today.
Well, thank you. I enjoyed it. I really did. Thanks.
Thanks for joining us at Work From Your Happy Place. If you like what you hear, please share it with your friends and be sure to rate and review us on iTunes or Stitcher. For a free gift on finding your own happy place, please visit workfromyourhappyplace.com and click on the free audio button. Thanks again for listening.